Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading text number 30. We're also going to read text 31. Bhutai panchabir arabdhe.
Bhutai panchabir arabdhe.
Dehe deya buddho sakrit.
Dehe deya buddho sakrit.
Aham ametya sad graha.
Aham ametya sad graha.
Karoti kumatir matim. Bhutai panchabir arabdhe. Dehe deyo buddho sakrit. Aham ametya sad graha. Karoti kumatir matim. Bhutai.
Bhutai.
By material elements. Panchabi.
Five.
Arabde.
Made.
Dehe.
In the body.
Dehi. The living entity. Abuddha. Ignorant. Asakrit.
Constantly.
Sound doesn't sound good. Aham.
I.
Mama.
Mama.
Mine.
Mine.
Iti.
Thus.
Asat.
Non-permanent things.
Graha. Accepting. Karoti.
He does.
Kumatihi.
Being foolish.
Matim.
Thought.
Translation. By such ignorance, the living entity accepts the material body, which is made of five elements, as himself. With this misunderstanding, he accepts non-permanent things as his own and increases his ignorance in the darkest region. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The expansion of ignorance is explained in this verse. The first ignorance is to identify one's material body, which is made of five elements, as the self. And the second is to accept something as one's own due to a bodily connection. In this way, ignorance expands. The living entity is eternal, but because of his accepting non-permanent things, misidentifying his interest, he is put into ignorance, and therefore he suffers material pangs. And the next verse just carries the same message. Text 31, translation. For the sake of the body, which is the source of constant trouble to him, and which follows him because he is bound by ties of ignorance and fruitive activities, he performs various actions which cause him to be subjected to repeated birth and death. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that one has to work to satisfy Yajna or Vishnu, for any work done without the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the cause of bondage. In the conditioned state, a living entity, accepting his body as himself, forgets his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and acts on the interests of his body. He takes the body as himself, the bodily expansions as his kinsmen, and the land from which his body is born as worshipable. In this way, he performs all sorts of misconceived activities which lead to his perpetual bondage and repetition of birth and death in various species. Paragraph. In modern civilization, the so-called social, national, and government leaders mislead people more and more under the bodily conception of life, with the result that all the leaders, with their followers, are gliding down to hellish conditions, birth after birth. An example is given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Andha Yatandayar Upaniya Mana. When a blind man leads several other blind men, the result is that all of them fall down in a ditch. This is actually happening. There are many leaders to lead the ignorant public, but because every one of them is bewildered by the bodily conception of life, there is no peace and prosperity in human society. So-called yogis who perform various bodily feats are also in the same category as such ignorant people, because the Hatha Yoga system is especially recommended for persons who are grossly implicated in the bodily conception. Very popular. The conclusion is that as long as one is fixed in the bodily conception, he has to suffer birth and death. If I could have Bhagavad Gita, that would be nice. Thank you. In the previous section, well, the whole chapter is the movements of the living entity. So in the previous section, the living entities sojourn through life in the womb, coming out of the womb, and up to becoming a youth, and then the etc. phases of the living entities' movements have been described. Then comes the recap, or the overriding principles that are prevalent at every stage. And ignorance is the focus here in both 30 and 31. The previous, it was false prestige, so passion, and following passion comes ignorance. Chasing after fulfillment of material desires comes frustration when material desires are not fulfilled. That's one way of characterizing the mode of ignorance. Lamentation, anger, madness, delusion, bewilderment. Those are the pleasant characteristics of ignorance, the common characteristics of ignorance. But then there's another sense that's being described here, a broader, pervasive one. And that is very tightly connected to false ego. False ego says, you are something that you are not. Whatever that is, something that you're not, except that's something that you're not as what you are. And Prabhupada would speak about that as madness. Supposing someone thought they were Napoleon Bonaparte and went around and trying to organize the French Revolution. You know, that person would get a label. The person's psychotic. He has a mental imbalance. He thinks he's something he's not. And he's living his life as if he is that something that he's not. You probably heard this description. Prabhupada described, when he was living in Bombay at one time, there was a man who committed murder. And the lawyer representing him pleaded to the judge, "Your Honor, he performed this act of murder. He pleads guilty with an explanation. He performed the act of murder, but he was in a state of madness when he did it. He was crazy. He just had a mental delusion, so he shouldn't be killed. He should be given some other, you know, consideration." So the judge prescribed that ordered that a psychiatrist examined to see if he was crazy, and the psychiatrist took the witness stand and said, "Your Honor, from my many years of experience as a psychiatrist, my conclusion is everyone is more or less crazy." So you may do with this man whatever you feel is appropriate. And from the scriptural perspective, I don't know if that psychiatrist was thinking from a Bhagavad Gita perspective or a Bhagavatam perspective, but from our Bhagavat Dharma perspective, this is the nature of false ego. It's accepting my identity to be something which I am not. And that's directly built into the verse. Mutai. By material elements. Five in number. Arabdhe, made. That, and then what does it make? It makes the body. And then, there's dehe, this little Sanskrit lesson. Then there's dehi. And dehi is one who occupies the dehe. That's the soul that's embodied by the body. The body that's made of these things. The soul. Ad-buddha. So there's buddha or buddhi, and there's ab-buddha or ab-buddhi. So one becomes ignorant. And it's not just sometimes. It's asakrit. Constantly. Dehi, abuddha, asakrit. The soul identifies. So, abuddha, this is now moving with this kind of parallel explanation or something. The mode of ignorance gives false ego a strong assist. They work together. One who distracts your attention, the other who steals your property. Two thieves that are a good team. Like pickpocket. They have to move in the subways, and they've been move in India. It's a free for all at big festivals in India. They have extra police because it's a festival for pickpockets. And, one bumps into another one just with however they do it, some sharp instrument, and they open your whatever, where you have, they think you may have valuables. And kurta pockets make it real easy. And even, the things you put around your waist, so it's like right against, they know how to do that one too. And, they're thieves. So these two are thieves. They steal one's intelligence. So, false ego, and then the conception that the taking away of one's real intelligence is part of the mode of ignorance program. So one becomes covered by this mode of ignorance that assists the false ego conception. And then aham mameti. Aham, I, and mine. And this concept is a very important concept in the Bhagavatam. That means it's mentioned early, and then It's repeated in a number of places, in a number of places, in a number of places. There's a couple of places in the second canto, one that's very explicit. Sukadeva Goswami is speaking, canto 2, chapter 5. First, he glorifies Vasudeva, Krishna. I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the Supreme Controller, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent men, to call me the Supreme Controller. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position, but those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in the thought of Ahamamati. It is I and it is mine. Babbling like madmen. The illusory potency. So Maya Pritagana, Asarim Bhavam Ashrita, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. Even persons who are vastly learned, intelligent, eloquent, know so many things, just ask them, they'll tell you so many things. Professors of avidya, there's the world is filled with them. And such persons, Prabhupada would speak very strongly, that they're mudha. And there are different ways of translating that. One is an ass. One is foolish. One is a rascal. He liked rascal. They're rascals. And that's a strong word in the English language, but Prabhupada wasn't unclear about what word he was using. There was one little scene with professors in Prabhupada's garden in Los Angeles, and they said, Swamiji, maybe you should say something softer like misguided or mistaken. And then Prabhupada replied, the sum total of mistaken is this one. And smiled, and they laughed. So, the part of the misfortune is persons who are indeed learned, or let's say they're would-be brahmanas, they're endowed by God with the capacity to know, and they're misusing it. Therefore, innocent people are following them and being misled, so the brahmanas and kshatriyas, especially those with such propensity, are especially responsible to know the difference between matter and spirit, but they're not being trained. The difference between matter and spirit. Just as Prabhupada spoke at MIT when he was invited there in 1969 or something like that. And his opening remarks were, where in this wonderful, elevated, world-renowned institution is there the understanding of the difference between a living body and a dead body? What is life? What makes something live and something not alive? That they do not know, for all of the technology. So just such fundamental Sankhya understanding. Of course, we're fortunate. We've been given that understanding. But there's a tendency to hold on to this other thing, even though we know we don't let go of the bodily conception, aham, due to false ego and ignorance and our attachment to it. And then mamati is the what is mine, and they flow. What I am is the foundation. of the conception of what is mine. If I am this body, then what is mine is what is produced from this body. My work, the pay that I get from my work, the things that I buy with my pay, my bank balance, my home, my car, my stuff. And then it's categorized as asad, graha. Asad is impermanent, as opposed to sat. Who we really are is sat. But if we think of ourselves as asat, the first two lines, then what's mine is also in the category of asat. Graha means accepting. And the word at the bottom, kumatir, that's a very strong word. Mati is a state of mind. And kumati is very bad. Being foolish. He didn't smash that time, just being foolish. One is rendered foolish by this process of the material energy and are identifying with it. We don't have to identify with it, but we're very habituated to identifying with it. And therefore, the conclusion of the verse is, by this method, one increases his ignorance in the darkest region. And it's not just this lifetime. The next verse is, it carries over to the next lifetime for the sake of the body, which is a source of constant trouble to him and which follows him because he is bound by ties of ignorance and fruitive activities. He performs various actions which cause him to be subjected to repeated birth and death. Avidya karma bandhanam dadati klesham. Here's a gift, some suffering. Dadati means to give. Dadati pratigranati, offering of gifts and receiving gifts. So dadati klesha, that's the gift of the material energy. You get slapped. It's And it's not other people, it's the material energy. And the material energy is acting in whatever way it's acting because of our what's behind us. Our past free will choices of acting independently of Krishna. And however we chose, we get. Oh, why did they do this to me? I was reminded recently, because I visited Hawaii for the first time. I went there to spend some time with Vatsal, just basically to support the service that he was doing, because it's very difficult. It's an idyllic island in one sense, but the modes of nature are very active in another sense. And so by the time I got there, he had already gone. But I was reminded of the story that happened in Hawaii at the Hawaii Temple. Peter Burwash told the story. Maybe those of you that have been to the Festival of Inspiration have heard him say it maybe multiple times. I've heard him say it multiple times. There was a period of time when he lived in Hawaii, and one of the occupations he had was he was a tennis pro. So he not only, but he was a tennis teacher, and he taught teachers. He had like a business of teaching people tennis, and he had become quite successful. And when he visited the Hawaii Temple, he met Prabhupada and became very inspired by Prabhupada. And to this day, he's inspired by Prabhupada. He's a lifelong devotee. So at some point, that the temple was struggling, so he gave a donation to the temple, and I forget the amount. I think it was $500. I've heard the story told was a larger sum, but I recall it's $500, which he said at that time was a lot of money for, a young man. And the day after he gave the money to the temple president left and took the money. And he felt, one can imagine how he felt. He felt really bad. Wow, I just got taken to the laundry. And so when Prabhupada came again, he went to Prabhupada's room. It's a very nice space. It's not only a very nice space, that the whole vibration is, even if you don't know who Prabhupada is, you feel something. And if you know who Prabhupada is, you feel Prabhupada's presence. It's palpable. So he went to see Prabhupada and told him the story of what happened. And he was, wanting Prabhupada to commiserate or get on somebody's case or something like that. And what Prabhupada said was, don't blame the instrument of your own karma. He didn't say it was okay or you deserved it. He didn't say either of those things. He said, don't blame the instrument of your own karma when something comes your way. So obviously that stuck with Peter, and it's a good thing to stick with us. If something happens, something comes our way, a little bit like the question that you asked the other day, when something comes that hurts, how do you process that? Look inside yourself and see, something over here brought that over there. So what's that something over here that I need to work on? That's Vaishnava. It doesn't mean that hurting others is okay or stealing money is okay. It doesn't mean it's okay. But from our perspective, how do we process it? And in the bodily conception of life, one doesn't see that higher principle acting of the soul and the soul's implication in matter and so forth. We just look at, whether I like it or don't like it, whether it pleases me or displeases me. And then we feel different feelings, many of which are unhappy. And certainly it what's speaking here is that avidya karma bandhana, it binds one to material existence. So after explaining that, Prabhupada goes into, the leaders should take people out of that condition, but unfortunately they're misleaders, because they themselves have misconceptions. And then he quotes the verse from Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, Andha Yathandhair Upaniyamana. So just happen to have the verse handy. Andha means persons who are blind. And then yata, there's yata tata, as this, so that. It's a metaphor. Yata tata, that's a metaphor. Like this, so that. So you can understand something that's unknown by something that's known. So, yata, and then the same word. Andhai. Andha, andhai. The blind, and those who are also blind. The blind leads the blind. And what happens? Upaniyamana means is led. Upa is bringing one closer, like Upanishad, that which is close. So it brings one, Upa Isha, one comes close to God. So Upaniyamana, the blind leading other blind men, what's the result? Not a good result. They're walking on the road. Oh, I'll take you to the destination, but I can't see either. And you fall in the ditch. Not good. So, expanded to the modern, as he's saying here, the modern civilization. The modern civilization, there are such leaders. And we know the program. They promise so many things. Just vote for me. I'll make you happy. Prosperity and so many things. I don't know how popular a person would be if he spoke the message that Prabhupada wants to be spoken. Vote for me and I'll help you get out of ignorance. And thereby suffering will end. And how do you administrate accordingly? So, Vedic time, the kings had to have that capacity. And they would lead accordingly. They would lead according to the codes of the scriptures to take their citizens from the darkest regions of ignorance into the light. Our leaders don't do that. So, nate vidus, that's how the verse begins. Nate vidu. Vid means to know. Not means not. So, and te is a pronoun. They do not know. Sva artha, one's self interest. Sva is self or one's own. And artha is goal or interest. They don't know the goal of life, the real interest of life. He, Vishnu, certainly is Vishnu. Not tevidu svarta katimhi Vishnu. They don't know. And so, what do they do? Durashaya. They're very ambitious to enjoy material existence. Dur. Asha. Asha means desire. Durasha. Bad desire. Very actively pursuing bad desires. Bahir. Artha. Manina. Bahir means outside. Bahir nishingo. Hridaye nishingo. He's outside and within. Bahir. Artha. Artha is the same word. Artha, the goal. Something. They see that the goal, the valuable thing, is out there. Get it. Get that doodad. Get that gizmo. Get that education so you can get the money so you can get the gizmo. So you can enjoy. Go, go, go. Gross national product. So, bahi artha manina. Their conception, manina, their conception is, go for it. And such persons are andha. Andha yatandhair upaniyamana. Such persons are in leadership positions and they lead other blind people. Ti pisha tantriyam uru dhami. Very strong ropes. It binds living entity to fall into this unfortunate condition. Material existence. Bound up further and further. That's the picture of the Bhagavatam, of the civilization. So it's a little revolutionary talk, but the civilization that we're part of. And gee, we don't want to rock the boat. We don't want, you know, relatives to think that we're abnormal and something. And society and, you know, all the Anta folks. Because they're very powerful. And just like children in school, they want acceptance from their peers. You step out of line, you be different, and oh, look at that person. We were discussing it with yesterday evening. There I was sharing with Shriniti. There is a girl in Seattle, and she's one of the congregation members' children, and she's frugal. So she, if a sock gets a rip in it, she wears two different socks because she doesn't want to throw away the other sock just because one's got a rip in it. And then she started liking it, so she always wears two different colored socks. And, you know, initially kids in school would laugh at her. Nah. And now it's a fashion. They all have to wear two different socks. And she has this sweater where she was wearing last night where there's a, not only there's a hole in the sleeve, but there's a hole for the thumb. And it's both sides. And, you know, the kids would, yeah, look at that. And then they start, it's a fashion. They want to do it too. Or then we were sharing, you know, kids with their, one of the other mothers. My daughter was taking her prasadam from home. And the kids would, oh, look at what you're eating. How come you don't eat with us? They say, because we like rice and we like these foods. So she endured it, and it finally got to the point where they said, hey, let me try it. Now they wanted to bring from their home their own food that from, started a fashion. So, you know, from kids and then adults, you know, what we need to do is be who we are. Know why we want to be why we want to be what we want to be and be it. And people may be accepting, not accepting. So that's, you know, it's, as a leader, you act in that way as a leader. You just be who you are. You don't have to force other people to be like you are. You just be who you are. And others will follow. In some cases, they'll follow just because it's fashion. They're just blind followers. But somewhere in there may be some people that actually want to know, hey, why do you wear two different socks? Why do you put your thumb through your sweater sleeve? And why do you do what you do? And don't do what you don't do. And if the individual has convictions, they can explain. If people don't understand, it's okay. I'm going to do what I do. Because here's the reason. It's not just, I imagined the reason, and then I bought into the reason, because that's going to change over time. But on a scriptural basis, why do we do what we do? The last part of the purport I'll also read once again, where Prabhupada writes not only people in general, but he goes for the so-called yogis. So-called yogis who perform various bodily feats are also in the same category as such ignorant people. Because the Hatha Yoga system is especially recommended for persons who are grossly implicated in the bodily conception. It's not too flattering. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does recommend it. So it's bona fide, Prabhu. But what does he say? Chapter 12, Bhagavad Gita, is where he says it. You know, this is the highest platform. You can't do this, do this. You can't do this, do this. Can't do this, do this. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. If you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge is meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. That's this. Whoops. Mameti. Aham mameti. That's the mameti part, based on the aham part, the misconception of I'm this body, and so I'm attached to the fruits of my work. So you do meditation if you can't be freed from that misconception. Cultivation of knowledge, so it goes. Cultivation of knowledge, meditation, renunciation of fruits of the work. Cultivation of knowledge is basically trying to understand what's what. And not just from the culture of avidya, from the secular education program, but spiritually, trying in an inquisitive way, who am I? And try to seek the answer to those to that question and all those related questions through study. And then better than that is meditation, because meditation requires control of both the mind and the senses. But just not just curbing the mind and the senses, but sacrificing unto the Supreme. Renouncing the fruits of one's work unto the Supreme. It's better. Why? For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. Try to do meditation when you're not peaceful. You think about the stuff that's disturbing you during your meditation. So, the renunciation of the fruits of the work, this, mameti, depends upon the spiritual conception of who you think you are. It's not just giving things up, not that kind of renunciation, but dedicating the fruits of your work to the Supreme. It's grounded on a spiritual conception. Going back, that both lust and anger are grounded on the mode of passion. So, it's a tag team, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. What's a nice person supposed to do? It's a tough situation. You need association of sadhus, is the teaching of the Bhagavatam, and in the association of sadhus, you do what sadhus do, bhajana kriya. You hear and chant the topics of the personality of Godhead to gradually cleanse away these misconceptions while you're doing your meditation and doing your cultivation of knowledge and doing the renunciation of the fruits of the work. The higher principle is the bhakti principle, and the regulations of bhakti help carry one to that position where there's a desire to attain Krishna. The desire to be always in one's relationship with Krishna. And if you can't do that, do this and do this, do this. But the Hatha Yoga, very popular, not just popular in America. I don't mind sharing this from my visits to China. Really popular. I mean, there's a lot of Chinese people over there and they like yoga. And so we can try to, in one sense, piggyback or dovetail the interest in yoga with the message of Krishna consciousness. Hello, you're not this body, while you're trying to make your body nice and feel good. And then go and enjoy. It has another purpose. Partly the risk is not giving the real thing and becoming watered down in the effort of connecting with people or some interest that they have. So as devotees, we always have to bear in mind the svartha, the real self-interest, the goal of life is Vishnu. And say it. It can be said in different ways and said nicely, but say it. Understand it and be it and say it in an appropriate time, place, circumstance, manner when we're doing this kind of bridge preaching activity, reaching out to people who are just in the bodily conception and that's all they want. Okay. Any comments or questions? from you.
I was wondering if there were, if you could maybe be a little more specific, like how somebody like Barack Obama is misleading all the citizens.
Okay, here's one. Here's the Peter Burwash's favorite. He was very hopeful when he was elected, thinking not just he's liberal, but he has some spirituality to him. And the very first act, I wasn't aware of this, but Peter Burwash has said this like with anger. The very first act he did was he pushed forward legislation to allow Medicare or medical care to permit third-term abortions. It was a big thing for him, and it went through. Who knows what he was thinking, and his, you know, one can guess, but what his thoughts were, it's steeped in ignorance. Unconscionable. For example. Yes.
I'm trying to understand what...
Little further away. Your voice is strong.
I'm trying to understand the bhakti and the knowledge, the difference. It means like just having the jnana is not going to help.
It's insufficient. It will help. It will help, but it doesn't take one to the goal.
But what I was understanding is whenever we carry the bhakti, so I mean my understanding is this bhakti and jnana is like go together.
No.
It's not like if you get the knowledge, you automatically get the bhakti, or if you get the bhakti, you automatically try to get the knowledge. So
no.
That's what my understanding.
No. The first part yes, the second part no. If you have, it's not like you stack up a pile of books and you can reach the moon. By knowledge that you can get bhakti. Just learn more and learn more. Voila. Bhakti comes out. You can reach Krishna. No. The other is, through bhakti, you know the verse from the Bhagavatam, janayati ashu vairagyam jnanam cha yadahai to come. Causelessly, from devotional service, knowledge awakens. What happens when you have a diamond in the rough, they say, an unpolished diamond, you polish the diamond. The sparkle is there because it's inherently there. So inherent in the soul, through the agency of bhakti, that inherent knowledge shines. So what is it that we're doing when we're reading Bhagavad Gita and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and doing what we're doing right now, discussing? It's not accumulation of jnana. It's not what it is. What it is appreciation of Krishna, hearing about Krishna and the process of devotional service to Krishna. It's bhakti. And by engaging in bhakti, automatically, knowledge is there. But it's the kind of knowledge that if one doesn't have devotion, what knowledge isn't going to come. So bhakti gives rise to gyan, not the other way around. Go ahead.
So follow-up question of this. So I was trying to understand, a lot of devotees are there in the Vrindavan, like with more bhakti, doing a lot of devotional service in all the temples, the whole Vrindavan itself. It's like that.
Why not the whole of St. Louis?
we see a lot of bhakti and devotion to Krishna. But
we also see a lot of ignorance.
So they don't carry this much knowledge, but still they are so bhakti, a lot of devotees are there.
There's a lot of devotees, but they're misguided. I'm repeating myself, and as you are repeating yourself. There's bhakti, and it's misguided. So what's that? It's not just jnana mishra bhakti, it's misguided. They have so many other conceptions and interests besides the real interest of bhakti. It's just a fact. It's not just the rickshaw wallahs. It's, you know, the people that live there. Particularly those who wish to have followers. And so on. Those that do things in Vrindavan. Misguided, misdirected. And Prabhupada would speak about it, and you can see it. You go on Govardhan Parikrama, you see all these sadhus set up, and they're having their ganja party. And what's that? Bhakti. Huh? Not. And other things we don't have to go into. Their conduct with the opposite gender. Both. Male and female. There's a lot of so-called bhakti. And sahajiism and so forth. So, the place isn't diminished by that, but those persons aren't accessing the place if it's misdirected. They're getting benefit just by living in Vrindavan, as are the monkeys and the hogs and dogs. Now, I'm not speaking that everybody that lives in Vrindavan is like that. But measure carefully what you're saying. There's lots of bhakti in Vrindavan, yes. And there's lots of misdirected activity in Vrindavan. So the broad sweeping statement is what I'm responding to. And so go ahead. You want to make a point?
So the conclusion here, my conclusion is like, so if I carry bhakti and I want to do devotional service, so I started doing it, so I have to get some knowledge.
Yes, it has to be rightly guided. But the knowledge is not separate from bhakti. It's how to engage in devotional service, and therefore it's under the category of bhakti. It's knowledge in devotional service. So it's not, I cultivate bunch again so I can do bhakti. Not. It's a part of how should I best serve Krishna. It's a part of bhakti. It's not. It's a different kind of knowledge. And it's the consciousness is different. That makes it bhakti. And I'll say it again. If the conception is I need knowledge in order to do bhakti, and so I have to go get some gyan to do bhakti. No. That's a misconception. Should I do it again? The right conception is devotion to Krishna. I wish to become more capable in devotion to Krishna. So let me hear. I need some knowledge in devotion to Krishna, how to do properly and how to not do improperly. I need to be properly guided. That's a component of, an element of bhakti. It's an anga of bhakti. It's not go over there to the gyan department and get juiced up and then come over here to the bhakti department and I can do my bhakti better. No. Our hearing is the first process of bhakti. It's a process of bhakti. And those that don't have that will think my success is how much knowledge I have. Whereas it's not true. A very simple person that hasn't studied and learned so much, if their heart is centered upon Krishna, that's sufficient. Now, so it can be sufficient for us too. But we're encouraged. Sambandh again is necessary. But it's for the purpose of bhakti. It therefore is an anga of bhakti. It's not a separate. Bhakti is not dependent on anything, including jnana. It's independent, as Krishna is independent. So Krishna can give knowledge, and the method is by hearing. And that knowledge is already there, it just awakens. That kind of knowledge. Knowledge in bhakti. Maybe it's not an important distinction. Maybe it is an important distinction. It's a different approach to how do we engage in reading and hearing and scrutinizingly studying. It's the purpose of it is, it's not independent from enriching my devotion to Krishna. Oh, how wonderful is Krishna. That kind of thing. Something else? Yes.
I was thinking of that same thing.
Good.
When you were talking about MIT.
Yeah.
And Einstein and Sir Isaac Newton and all these brilliant.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Lots of knowledge, lots of intelligence, very well respected. But there's a difference from the head to the heart.
Yes.
Yeah. And.
Yeah. Well, specific to Einstein, he was, Prabhupada spoke like this. Unlike many scientists, he respected God as there's a God and he's the controller. I stand at the ocean of knowledge and I'm awed at the vastness of God's existence. And therefore, from that principle alone, a different category than others who have a big brain, and Stephen Hawking's and people like that, that just, you know, let me show off my big brain and God doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
Yeah. And that's, they're almost looked upon as gods themselves.
Yeah.
Rather
yeah.
than a person who there is a switch from the head to the heart.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Someone else? Yes.
I want to let you know, Albert Einstein made a real interesting quote one time. He said, "I'm only concerned about what God thinks. The rest are details." He's quoted saying that.
Nice. I'm sure he said many other nice things like that. Teamwork. Okay, good.
You know, the second verse was said, without klesham, giving suffering, and then you expanded on it.
Yes.
With the example of Peter Bhavaj. I was having a discussion with a devotee, and the question was, how does one respond to suffering? And my response was, I gave some response, but I wanted to ask you, are there stages of how a devotee
sure.
responds to suffering, and
sure.
what are the stages? And
sure. You know, let's go to Queen Kunti. She's up there. Bring on the sufferings. Who thinks like that? May the sufferings come again and again. Please, Krishna, give me... Who thinks like that? Kunti thinks like that. But there's a reason. It's not, you know, she's a glutton for punishment. She understands the nature of Krishna. When the devotee is in difficulty, Krishna comes. When things get resolved, Krishna goes. So bring the calamities, not just sufferings. Difficult circumstance, what happens? The devotee calls out, Krishna, and Krishna comes. So the circumstance of her offering that prayer was, Krishna had come. The Kurukshetra battle was over. Yudhisthira is now king. Krishna's going. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar is told by Hanuman, the emblem of service to Ram, he said that the Pandavas are far more dear to the Supreme Lord than me. He just left me. He went to his abode and left me behind, bereft. Took 60,000 devotees and left me behind, said, you know, you can think about me and spread my glories. But the Pandavas, they're always intimately associated with Krishna. So Narada zoomed off to go see the Pandavas, and when he reached where the Pandavas were, they were having a conference on how to have a calamity. So that Krishna would come. Because he had left to go back to Dwarka. So that's one way to think of adverse circumstances. Another is, we'll go down to the very beginning, the instruction that Krishna gives in second chapter of Bhagavad Gita is you tolerate it. With knowledge that it's just duality. It's illusory energy doing its duality thing. Sometimes this, sometimes that. Sometimes this, sometimes that. And tolerate it. But when you tolerate it, that means you withdraw consciousness from the duality and place it on Absolute. You place it on Krishna. And then arising above it, it's you become indifferent. Because the knowledge and the happiness is so full, it reduces in significance. Like the light that comes from a firefly at night is one thing, and during the daytime it's just a bug. It's insignificant. Because there's so much light. So when you're in the light of transcendental existence, the dualities pale. And then Kapila Dev takes it even further. The way that the material energy configures itself changes when one's consciousness is free from material desire. It just disappears. And even the material mind disappears. The instrument that makes you feel those things. It dissolves the material mind. Not bad program. And then one wants them because Krishna comes, knowing Krishna's nature. Stages. Yes?
And Lord Brahma's prayer where he says, I'll tolerate whatever I
yes.
see, but then he fixed upon
this. Yes. Yes.
Right above the tolerance stage before.
No, it's a little bit more than above. It's a little bit more than a little bit above. It's definitely above. So here comes, I'm walking along the path of life, and here comes something awful. I can invest my consciousness in trying to make that something awful less awful. What Brahma is saying is, I've done a big boo-boo. I stole Krishna's calves and cowherd boys. I'm going to get a reaction. So rather than trying to minimize the reaction, I'll just accept the reaction. Because I deserve it. I've done something very wrong. I've offended Krishna's cows and cowherd boys. So I've offended Krishna. I deserve something as a reaction. And I'm not going to try to do something to make it less. So where will I place my consciousness instead? At your lotus feet. So that's, you know, that's closer to Queen Kunti's position. Then, you know, one is, I'm still concerned, but it's that the influence is diminishing. Because of my Krishna consciousness. And this is above that. Brahma's prayer. Okay, I'm going to end there. It's 9:00. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.